Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 359, and we're going to continue with the journeys of the children of Israel throughout the wilderness and all the places where God scouted and stopped in those places, and that's where they all stopped. And we are now in verse chapter 33 and verse 19. And we read here, and they journeyed from Ritma and pitched in Rimon Peretz. And Peretz was one of the sons of Judah, Rimon Peretz, Grenad, Rimon, that's what Rimon means, Grenad. And pitched in Libna, and they journeyed from Libna and pitched in Risa. And they journeyed from Risa and pitched in Kehelah, and they journeyed from Kehelah and pitched in Mount Shefer. So there's a name there, Mount Shefer. Later on, they took that name with them. And named one of the places there in the land, also Shefer. And from that comes Shofar. And Shefer also means better. And they journeyed from Mount Shefer and pitched in Haradah. Haradah means when somebody is scared, you know, is Hared, fearful. Why they called it a fearful place? Maybe something happened there that got people fearful. Verse 25, and the journey from Haradah and pitch in Makhelot. Makhelot means basically choirs. Very interesting names. Of course, every single one of them must have had a special meaning. And either that they gave the name to those places where they stopped, or there were already some kind of settlements there. But it seems to be from the names that they have used here, in many cases, it looks like something special happened there, and they themselves gave that place a name. And so, this is what we read here. And the journeys from Haradah and pitch in Makhelot, and the journey from Makhelot and pitch in Tahat. Tahat means under. And the journey from Tahat and pitch in Terah. And Terah was, obviously, the name of the father of Abraham. What's the link there? Who knows? And they journeyed from Terah and pitched in Mitka. And Mitka means sweet. Maybe they had some sweet water there. And they journeyed from Mitka and pitched in Hashmona. From that comes the Hashmonaim. And they journeyed from Hashmona and pitched in Moserot. And those Moserot means reins, like the reins of the horses. And they journeyed from Moserot and pitched in Bnei Yaakan. Apparently there were some people there of Yaakan, or maybe some of the children of Israel, whose name is called Yaakan, and his sons gave that name to that place. And they journeyed from Bnei Yaakan and pitched in Hor HaGidgad, in other words, the mountain of Gidgad. And they journeyed from Hor HaGidgad and pitched in Yotva. Yotva means good, better. And the journey from Yotva and pitch in Avronah, and the journey from Avronah and pitch in Etzion Gever. Etzion Gever, that's way down there, where today it's called Elat. King Solomon had his navy there, and pitch in the wilderness of Tzin. So now they're coming, or they're going down there, and then they're coming up. And as they go further up, they arrive to the land of Edom, the Dead Sea, and then Moab and Ammon. And the pitch in the wilderness of Tzin, and the same is Kadesh. Kadesh means holy, so there was a place there, and from that very point, from Kadesh, that Moses sent the spies into the land, the ones that came back, 10 of them, and spoke evil of the land. And so after Kadesh, the pitch in Mount Hor, and in Mount Hor, that's the place where Aaron died, and in the edge of the land of Edom. So now they're moving up closer, and Aaron the priest went up into the Mount of Hor. Moses later on went into the Mount Nebo, you know, further up, today in Jordan, and Hor also is in Jordan today. And at the command of the Lord, God told him, go up there and you die. So he went up there and just, I guess, lie down and close his eyes. God took his spirit at that point, and he died there. In the 40th year after the children of Israel were come out of the land of Egypt. So he survived the 40 years, and then right before they were to arrive to the land of Moab and Jericho and all that, That was the time when he died, and shortly after that, Moses died. And so that was in the fifth month, month of Ab, on the first day of the month. This is one of the calamities that in Jewish history, in the month of Ab, many bad things happen. The first and the second temple were destroyed on the ninth of Ab. The expulsion from Spain, you know, because the Inquisition happened also in the month of Ab and so forth. Many things like that happened around this time. Verse 39, and Aaron was 123 years old when he died in Mount Hor. And I believe also the Holocaust began around that time. And verse 40, and the Canaanite, the king of Arad, Arad is a name in the Negev today, Israeli territory of the Negev, the south, that's what Negev means, south, and Arad is a town, and dwelt in the south in the land of Canaan. So we're talking here about the Negev desert. So this king heard of the coming of the children of Israel, and they journeyed from Hor, in other words, he heard about it, so he went to war against them and conquered, you know, his territory. And they journeyed from Mount Hor and pitched in Salmonah. And they journeyed from Salmonah and pitched in Punon. And they journeyed from Punon and pitched in Ovot. Of course, a lot of these places have names and circumstances, and they were important in the history of Israel. They meant a lot to them. Of course, it doesn't mean anything to us. But when those people come back to life, you can go to them and ask them about all kind of details, and they'll tell you an awful lot of things, and then those names will, you know, will become very important to you. Since we know nothing about it, most people know nothing about it, nothing about that history, obviously, just names, and they mean nothing, especially when they were anglicized. That sounds so weird and strange that people, you know, don't want to pay much attention to it. Well, here it is, a whole chapter that God recorded in the Bible, and how can people say, well, you know, it's a boring stuff. What's boring about God? What part of the mind of God we find boring? You see? We're going to have to ask ourselves those kind of questions from time to time when we get to places like that that don't seem to be just as exciting as others. Who recorded them? Who caused them to be recorded? You see? Who is the one that went to this place and that place and chose that very place and told Moses, this is where we stop, and all Israel stopped there, and all kind of things happened there? And then he had it recorded in the Bible. You see? When you begin to think about it from that point of view, you expand your understanding a little bit more of what it means to put on the mind of Christ. And verse 44 we read, actually verse 45, no, verse 44, let's read it again. And they journeyed from Obot and pitched in Ir HaAbarim, and actually Behare, Hare HaAbarim, which means the mountains of Abarim. And unfortunately, in English, it just butchered it, you know, the name of this place. You would never recognize it. Ij Abarim. That means Hare, the mountains of Abarim, in the border of Moab. So now they are way up there, in a fertile land. And they journeyed from Iim. And in other words, Mehare HaAbarim, and pitch in Dibon Gad. And Gad was the tribe of one of the tribes that remained on the east bank. Maybe that's why they called it by that name. And they journeyed from Dibon Gad and pitched in Almon Divlataim. And they journeyed from Almon Divlataim and pitched in the mountains of Avarim. So this is where they were before that. And then we read verse 47 again, and the journey from Almon Divlataim and pitch in mountains of Avarim in front of Nebo, and Nebo, that's the place where Moses had to go up the mountain and die, and later on they built, that is the children of Gad, they built and Reuben, whoever had that territory, they built a city there and they called it Nebo. But on top of the mountain, I was there a couple of years ago, it's, you have quite a view there. When you look, you see the entirety of the whole basin there, of the Jordan Valley. And that's a place where Moses had to go up there and die. and they journeyed from the mountains of Avarim and pitched in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho. So now they are reaching the end of the road, and they pitched by Jordan from Beth Yeshimon even unto Abel Shittim in the plains of Moab, because there were so many of them. Obviously they had large territory that they occupied at that point. And it is in that place that Balak called for Balaam to come and curse Israel. And the Lord spoke unto Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho. And right next to that was obviously Mount Nebo, saying, "Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when you pass over the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you." You see? So that was one choice. Instead of killing them, drive them out. And they were given that opportunity to do so in recent history. And they did a little bit of that, but not all the way. And because of that, they have those headaches to this very day. Or God says, when you go into the land, you just totally chase them out. The people who do not want to, you go to war against them and totally destroy them. And so this is what he says here. He said, you shall drive them out, all the inhabitants, all the land from before you. God owns the land. God decides who lives there and who does not. You see, God can evict anybody he wants. Of course, today, enough people don't look at it that way. United Nations, other powers, the world powers are going to get involved in that, and they're going to oppose God. Well, he's going to let them know what he thinks about it, and then nobody's going to oppose God anymore after that. And as a matter of fact, the very people today that put pressure on the people of Israel to give land, you know, supposedly for peace, many of them children of Israel, America, France, and other countries there in Europe, are going to find them, as we read in Isaiah 11, being right there, having to fight for that land, you see, so they can inhabit the land. So the people that were pressuring Judah to give it up are going to have to fight for it to take it back. What an irony of things, and yet that was recorded a long time ago. And so this is what it says to them: you shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you and destroy all their figured stones. Nowadays they'll send their archaeologists and take it all and put it in museums. And he said, you destroy them. God didn't have much appreciation for this kind of archaeology. And destroy all their molten images and demolish all their high places. Nowadays they put them in the London Museum and everybody's museum. And people go by the millions to, you know, stand in line and watch them and pay money for it. We've come a long way from that. And you shall drive out the inhabitants of the land and dwell therein. For unto you have I given the land to possess it. When he brought Abraham from the land of Canaan, that is, into the land of Canaan, he already told him, this whole land is yours, but you're going to have to wait for about 400 years until your descendants come back, and when they do, I'll give it to them. And whoever is there is going to have to move out. You see? And that's, in essence, what the Palestinians are complaining about. You know, we were here all this time in different areas there, and those Jews, you know, those Zionists, you know, they came and drove us out, or, you know, took our land, or whatever it may be. Which is not all true, because a lot of that land was purchased with money by Jews that came over there. And obviously, when you have war, people flee, and that too happens. You know, they were driven out in some areas, and they were scattered in all directions. Well, that's exactly what's going to happen again, and not one single one of them is going to be left in the land if he's a rebel rouser. And those who are going to live in peace with Israel, God would allow them to stay there. As you read in Ezekiel, he allows some of the strangers who live in peace with Israel to stay there, but they're going to have to worship the God of Israel and not their own religion. That's still coming ahead of us. And so here he says, just drive them all out. You don't make any covenant with them, you know, none of them is going to be left behind. It's your land, because I give it to you, and God determines, because he owns the land. And one of these days, the whole earth is going to learn that, in the hard way, unfortunately. And so he says, in verse 54, and you shall inherit the land by lot according to your families. And that's a principle, and that's a part of the mind of God. And people don't think that way, and most of us probably don't even think that way. And we've got our own concepts and ideas because of the culture and the society and the religion and so forth that we've been raised in, and the miseducation that we got. He says, according to your families, To the more you shall give the more inheritance, and to the fewer you shall give the less inheritance. Nowadays we think, well, you know, if I'm smart and hard working and intelligent and all that, the more I get, the better it is, and who cares about the others? You see? And so the whole economy and the system on a global basis functions like that, and that's how you have all those giant corporations that gobble up everybody in sight and everyone. And a new outfit moves into town and drives all the little guys in our mom and pop stores. You see, that's the way the world works today. And that's the way they do it in land and in positions and in everything else. You know, if I'm in a high position, I should get, you know, a lot of money, a big, huge salary. And all those peons, you know, out there at the bottom, who cares about them? You know, they just get a little bit. So the CEOs are extremely rich. They've got castles. They've got palaces. They've got all these things, you know, all this materialism. And an awful lot of poor people all around. Well, God doesn't function like that. According to your needs, He's going to give to you, and you cannot eat more than two steaks. So what do you need five for? You see? He does not believe in the system of rich and poor. Everybody gets what he needs, just like in a family. You don't have rich people and poor people within your own family. You know, you don't say to one kid, well, you'll get 10 outfits. You see, and you get only one, and a torn out. You see? Something that, you know, is a handy hand-me-down, things like that. No family functions like that unless they're totally insane in that family and totally warped up. You see, damage, whatever people, you know, dysfunctional. That's not the family of God. Everybody gets what he needs. There are more of you, bigger family. Well, he's a bigger family, you get a bigger piece of land. And nobody cares whether you're rich or poor, intelligent, high office, low office, didn't make any difference. Joshua didn't get more land because he was Joshua. You see, the priest didn't get more land because, you know, they're way at the top. Everybody got exactly according to the size of their family. And if there was a priestly family that was in a higher position, so to speak, if they had only two kids, that's all they got. Enough for two kids. And the father and mother, you know. On the other hand, you know, there was a family that had 10 children, that priestly family, or an Israelite family, whatever it may be, they got exactly according to their needs. This is God's way. A lot of people don't function like that, and we think it's strange, you know. If I'm smart and hardworking and all that, why shouldn't I have more? Well, oftentimes to have more, that means others have less. It's as simple as that. And this, therefore, it is contrary to the mind of God, and people are going to put on the mind of Christ. This is the mind of Christ here. Of course, today we're all messed up. You cannot do it. You see? But people still care. If they have plenty, they share it with others. You see? That's what God says. I give a lot of those blessings, but I want you to take care of the poor, of the widows, of those in need. Help others also to rise to the top, to have decent quarters and decent living and decent jobs and education and things like that. Don't hoard it all to yourself. He made it very plain what he thinks about people like that when he gave the parable about the rich man. He had so much. Well, we're not talking about the Lazarus and the rich man. That was another problem there. But the other rich man, he was having so much. And he said, well, I've got so much. I've got to build me, you know, more barns and just so I can put in all this in storage. I have plenty. You see? And God said, you fool, this night your soul will be taken away from you, your life. And he made it very plain how God feels about those people who like to hoard to themselves and become corporations and giants and all that at the expense of everybody else. This is a demonic, satanic mind from his point of view. You see? Now, this is not God's system. That's the reason why in the future he's going to totally devastate this whole system from top to bottom, and then he's going to resettle all of his children in their own land. And to the many he will give more, and to the less he will give less. And they shall all live under their fig tree and their vine. Nobody's going to take them or scare them or terrorize them or make them afraid and try to grab whatever they had so they can have more. And so this is what it says here. That's the way it's going to be. And you shall inherit the land by lot according to your families. To the more you shall give the more inheritance, and to the fewer you shall give the less inheritance. Regardless of position, of intelligence, or whatever. And wheresoever the lot falls to any man, that shall be his. You cannot say, well, I don't like it here, and I like it up there. And more important, I want to be on top. I want to be by the beach, you know, Malibu, and so forth. Well, he says, no, you're going to cast a lot, and I'm going to guide it and direct it, and your lot is going to be, you see, where you get it. No exchange. Very basic, very plain. That's the mind of Christ, and we don't function like that. And that's why it says, you know, as Paul said, you know, you're members of the body, and God puts you, you see, in the body wherever He, you know, He feels that you fit there. This is where you can produce what God wants you to produce, and you don't complain when you don't say, well, how come I'm not in this position? How come He's in that position and I'm not, and so forth. You see, when people are obedient to God, that's not an issue. That's not a problem. Wherever you are, God is going to bless you. You see, and you work in harmony and unity, and you're happy for others that they have what they have. And so, this is what he's saying here. Whatever, you know, you get a lot, this is where you stay. And he says, wheresoever the lot falls to any man, that shall be his, according to the tribes of your fathers shall you inherit. So you don't decide, well, I want to live, you know, in the upper Galilee, or I want to live in the south. If your tribe is wherever your tribe is, this is where you're going to be. And verse 55 we read, but if you will not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then shall those that you let remain of them be as thorns in your eyes. And that's what they are today in the Middle East. A lot of thorns, constantly, you know, picking at your flesh and stinging you, you know, with bombs and terror and things like that. Why? Because the people of Israel, who came back to the land instead of seeking God and His path and His way, reading the book of the law, finding out how exactly God wants them to behave, what to do, they haven't done that as a nation. Because to begin with, most of the leaders were irreligious. They came from communist Russia, a lot of them, had no religion, didn't care much. And many came out of the, you know, the Holocaust, you know, they couldn't care less about God and religion. They lost their faith, and so, to their own hurt, now they are where they are. And until they are crying, they cry to God to deliver them, they're going to be in that mess, and nobody's going to get them out of it. And that's what he's saying here. As I said, to those people of Israel, to the forefathers of the present people who are there today, so he says today. And likewise, you see, even in this land in the Americas or in other countries in Europe, you know, when they went over there, there were people around that drove them out and they resettled in their places. And so that has been happening throughout the history of Israel to this very day. And people who followed the guidance and direction of God, well, they have no more problems with the natives. And this is God's way, and of course people don't like it, they'll speak evil of it, and people have been doing it all along anyway. And so he says, if you don't do it, if you don't drive the inhabitants of the land from before you, then shall those that you let remain of them be as thorns in your eyes and as pricks in your sides, and they shall harass you in the land wherein you dwell. That's a very problem that you find today in the land called Israel by God. You see, it's not by the Jews. They just gave it the name that God gave it. It's not Palestine. It's the others who insist that it is Palestine are the ones that are just constantly thorns in their flesh and pricks in their sides. And because Judah, the people of Israel, they were brought back, you know, Judah, Benjamin, Levi, and some sprinklings of Israel, because they haven't done that, because they haven't obeyed the voice of God as commanded unto Moses. They're paying the penalty, and they're going to continue to pay a very heavy penalty for that. Verse 56, and it shall come to pass that as I thought to do unto them, so will I do unto you. So this is a command of God that has not been obeyed, and for which they're paying very dearly. You see? And so that's what's happening. As they came and took lands that God gave them to begin with, and others called Arab lands, so now you see a reversal. Now God is making it possible for the Arabs to get back those lands, which to begin with belonged to Israel. But that's the reality of it. So all these peace accords will be, in essence, a punishment on the part of God, you know, against Israel. That is, He's the one initiating that because of the attitudes of the people that He brought back to the land who had not done what God commanded them to do through Moses. You see? And That's the way it works. The word of God is very lively. It is it's a contemporary word at any given age. It's not old stuff. The law of God is the law of God. The commandments of God are the commandments of God. And people who despise them and disregard them, they pay the penalty. Whether it was 3,500 years ago or today, it doesn't make any difference. Same God, same land, same people, same law. No change whatsoever. You see? And it's only at the end when they learn their lesson, God's going to tell them, okay, go get the land. I'm going to do it for you, just like in the days when they came out of Egypt and went into the land. They had to go to war. And God is going to make Israel go to war and recapture all the territory from the Euphrates all the way down to the south, and gradually into the land of Egypt, into the Nile. And that's how they're going to inhabit it. He's not going to give it to them on a silver platter. And that's what you see in essence in Isaiah 11. And in Obadiah. Well, the house of Joseph is going to be a fire, you see, as you read there. And with the house of Judah, and they're going to burn the inhabitants of the land, which are going to become like stubble at that point. So this is the future of the area. And all the allied forces, you know, that are in the Middle East there, part of them were going to go into captivity then. The remnants of them are coming back to the land of Israel. Now this time, their own land, not the old country where they came from now. And God is going to put them to work. You know, you go and clear up the land, and God is going to be with them. That's what you read in Zechariah 14. You know, when God descends on the Mount of Olives, Jesus Christ, then Judah also shall fight. See, a lot of them are just holding back now and doing nothing about it. When God commands them to go fight and take the land, just kick out all the inhabitants of the land that don't belong there. But that's still ahead of us. And so we read in chapter 34 now, in verse 1, and the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, command the children of Israel, and say unto them, when you come into the land of Canaan, this shall be the land that shall fall unto you for an inheritance. So now he's going to describe the borders of the land. And those borders have not changed to this very day from the point of view of God. You see? As a matter of fact, even after that, God said they're even going to expand north and south and east and west, you know, as a multiply. As you read in the prophets also, that they're going to complain, you know, the land is too narrow, you know, we're multiplying, what are we going to do? And he's going to increase the territory, even into the water, you know, into the Mediterranean. It's going to be shrinking and withdrawing, and they're going to have more land in that area. They're going to have it more in the east, you see, more in the north, more in the south. Until they find in Isaiah 19 that five cities in the land of Goshen, the land that anciently was given to the children of Israel, is going to be given again, horror of horrors, to the Egyptians. They don't even, you know, dream about it in their worst nightmares. Will be given back to the land of Israel, to the people of Israel, because they're going to be expanding in all directions. And that's going to be the future. And so, we read here, the borders of the land. Command the children of Israel and say unto them, when you come into the land of Canaan, this shall be the land that shall fall unto you for an inheritance, even the land of Canaan, according to the borders thereof. So it was called the land of Canaan, not the land of Palestine. Saying a lot of historians like to call it, even in those days, you know, Abraham came to Palestine. He didn't come to Palestine. He didn't come to the land of the Philistines, who were, you know, along the coast there, in the Gaza area today. He came to the land of Canaan, and also the land of the Philistines belonged to Canaan, and was a part of the inheritance of Dan. And so he says, this is the land of Canaan, according to the borders thereof. Thus your south side shall be from the wilderness of Tzin, so from the way down there, in the Negev, close to the side of Edom, and your south border shall begin at the end of the Salt Sea. And that was only the beginning of it, you see, as they multiply, the land was going to be expanded. So one side was the Salt Sea, that is the Dead Sea, eastward, and your border shall turn about southward of the ascent of Akrabim. And you have to look at ancient maps to see the location of all these places. Akrabim means scorpions. That's the name they called it. And as a matter of fact, you can go today and you travel there in that direction, and there is a road that is called Male Akrabim. Still the same place, same name. And that is, you know, the ascent of the scorpions. Apparently, you know, it was in the desert, lots of scorpions there. And pass along to Tzin, or Zin. And the goings out thereof shall be southward of Kadesh Barnea. And it is from that place that the spies were sent. and it shall go forth to Hazar Hadad and pass along Atzmon, and the border shall turn about from Atzmon unto the brook of Egypt, Nachal Mitzrayim, and it's in the Sinai today. And so a lot of people confuse the brook of Egypt with the river of Egypt. You see, the territory that God gave Israel ultimately goes all the way to the Nile, to the river of Egypt. But at that time, you see, as I settled the land in the beginning, it was only until the brook of Egypt, which was in the Sinai. And so people mix the two. And they don't really know all the prophecies about it, where sometimes God says, from the river of Egypt, you see, and that's speaking about the Nile. And here we read about the brook of Egypt, which is another area. And so the ultimate borders of Israel, as they are going to expand, will really reach all the way, as he told Abraham and later on to Moses, you can read in Deuteronomy, from the river of Egypt, not the brook of Egypt, two different places. And so the goings, that's going to be from the brook of Egypt, and the goings out thereof shall be at the sea, speaking about the Mediterranean, and for the western border you shall have the Great Sea for a border. This shall be your west border, and this shall be your north border from the Great Sea, that is from the Mediterranean, you know, speaking way up there in Lebanon. You shall mark out your line unto Mount Hor. From Mount Hor you shall mark out a line unto the entrance of Hamat, and that's up there in Lebanon today. And the goings out of the border shall be at Zedad, and the border shall go north to Zifron, and the goings out thereof shall be to Hatzar Enan, and there shall be your north border. And you shall mark out your line for the east border, for the Hatzar Enan to Shephan. And notice, who is the one drawing the map? It's God himself. You see? So God himself drew the borders. Israel had nothing to do with it. Joshua had nothing to do with it. Moses had nothing to do with it. And to this very day, none of those people have anything to do with it. So for them to sit down and negotiate borders and territories and lands and all that, that's an absolute blasphemy against God himself. Of course, they don't see it that way. One of these days they are going to. And they're going to be obedient to his map. You see? You're not going to have a united nation or the big power sitting down and dividing that land according to their own doings. That's what you read in Ezekiel 35 and then 36. You know, they have parted my land, God says. This is my land. And they've got the audacity to go over there and sit down in their committees and part my land. And God is going to take vengeance on all those people who have been responsible for it, including his own people, Israel, or the French, or the Americans, or the British, and others. You see? In their ignorance, not even knowing who they are, they were parting the land of God. And so this is what we read here. But those borders that were drawn by God himself, verse 10, and you shall mark out your line for the east border from Hatzar Enan to Shepham, and the border shall go down from Shepham to Riblah. Of course, you'll get more sense of this when you take a map and you just look at it, especially an ancient map, not a modern one, that has, you know, those names all still on it. And you have to go to a map from the days of the conquest and the days of Joshua. So it cannot be a modern one because you would not see any of those names there. And the border shall go down from, verse 11, from Shephan to Riblah. And Riblah was a place in northern Syria today. And it is the very place where the king of Babylon, King Nebuchadnezzar, was stationed over there. And when Nebuchadnezzar, that is Zedekiah, the king of Judah, fled, that's where the king was of Babylon, and he took him and his sons over there, and this is where he blinded the eyes of Zedekiah and killed his sons in front of his eyes before he blinded his eyes. That was in Riblah. So, you know, it's a meaningful name, especially when you know the history of that time. And this was a place on the east side, so that place actually belongs to Israel, and yet at the time it was in the hand of the Syrians. And Babylon obviously conquered that territory. And on the east side of Ain, and the border shall go down and shall strike upon the slope of the Sea of Kinneret eastward. And obviously at this point you notice that he did not even mention the Euphrates, and yet it was nearby that area, and yet the border of Israel, in terms of the general borders that he gave to Abraham and to Moses, are all the way to the Euphrates. You see? And so there is an extension to be made there as time goes by also. And God takes all that into account, and other people will just have to move out, go somewhere else, because God is the owner of it. And the border shall go down from Shifan to Riblah to the east side of Ain, and the border go down and shall strike upon the slope of the Sea of Kinneret eastward. And there used to be a sea there called Kinneret. Kinneret means violin. It was in the shape of an ancient violin, you know, a round one, not the modern one. And unfortunately, even that one is shrinking today. We call it the Sea of Galilee today, and it's shrinking very much. And the border shall go down to the Jordan, and the goings out thereof shall be the Salt Sea. That's the Dead Sea. That's the name of it in Hebrew. It's not Dead Sea in Hebrew. It's Salt Sea, Yam HaMelach. This shall be your land according to the borders thereof round about. You see? And God himself that drew the map. So, if people were obedient to him, and all those who call themselves Muslims, who claim that they are believers in Allah, well, this is Allah speaking here. You see? One of these days, they're going to obey the voice of this Allah, which now they don't know. They think they do. And Moses commanded the children of Israel, saying, "This is the land wherein you shall receive inheritance by lot, which the Eternal," you see, Jehovah, Elohim, Allah, "has commanded to give unto the nine tribes and to the half tribe." Now, when Muhammad had information of this, he claimed that he believed the scriptures and he believed in the God of Israel, and he made it very plain. There are many statements there in the Quran for those who care to read it. Obviously, Muslims don't read it. They don't read their own book. They don't know what's in it. But he made it very plain that this land God gave, Allah gave to Israel. You see, through Moses. And he acknowledged it. And yet, those who came after him couldn't care less about what their own prophet said and what their own book, the Quran, says. That shows you what kind of people they really are. They're phonies from the point of view of Muhammad. They can call themselves Muslims all they want. From his point of view, they are not. They're rebels. You see, had he been alive today, he would have told them that. And it's quite a shock for them to realize that, but that's unfortunately their own clerics are ignorant and blind, or they're willfully blind and ignorant of what their own Quran says, and they deceive their own people, calling it Arab lands. All they may acknowledge, well, in the old days, yes, that was yours, but you rebelled against God, God took it away from you, and now he gave it to us. That's not what Muhammad said. He made it very plain that that land was given to Israel, just like as God said, forever. He never laid claim to that place. He never laid claim to Jerusalem. You know, all these are myths that developed later on, unfortunately. And this is what God says, God of Israel and the God of Ishmael, the God of all the Arabs, that they would worship him instead of their, you know, their own concept of what he is or what he says. And so Moses commanded the children of Israel, saying, "This is the land wherein you shall receive inheritance by lot, which the Eternal has commanded to give unto the nine tribes and to the half tribe." You know, it's not Moses' stuff, it is God. "For the tribe of the children of Reuben, according to their fathers' houses, and the tribe of the children of Gad, according to their fathers' houses, have received, and the half tribe of Manasseh have received their inheritance." In other words, in today's modern Jordan. The Jordanians wouldn't like to hear that. One of these days, they're going to have to live with this reality. They have to be moved out. And verse 15, "The two tribes and half tribe have received their inheritance beyond the Jordan at Jericho eastward toward the sun rising." And that's what east in Hebrew means, Mizrah. That's where the sun rises. Verse 16, "And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, These are the names of the man that shall take possession of the land for you, Eleazar the priest, and Joshua the son of Nun." In other words, the religious and the civil leaders are going to be in charge of that, and in everything in the government of Israel, there was no separation between church and state. When it is all one God, one religion, one doctrine, one faith, and all that, there is no need for it. And when it's not, that's where the problem is. Verse 18, "And you shall take one prince of every tribe to take possession of the land." So somebody's going to be in charge, so people don't go and just fight over this land and that land. Everything has to be done in order, in harmony, you see, in peace. And so God organizes everything to the detail. And verse 19, and these are the names of the men of the tribe of Judah, Caleb the son of Jephunneh, and by this time he's already about 85 years old, and of the tribe of the children of Simeon, Shmuel the son of Amihud, the tribe of Benjamin, Eliadad the son of Kislon, and of the tribe of the children of Dan, a prince, Buki, that's his name, Buki, interesting name, Buki the son of Hogli, of the children of Joseph, of the tribe of the children of Manasseh, a prince, Haniel, the son of Ephod, that's an old American name, people don't think about it nowadays, those terms, and the tribe of the children of Ephraim, a prince, Kemuel, the son of Shiftan, it's a good English name, and of the tribe of the children of Zvulun, a prince, the Dutch people, Elitzaphan, the son of Parnach, and of course all these names mean something, I don't intend here to translate all of them, and of the tribe of the children of Issachar, a prince, Paltiel, the son of Azan, and of the tribe of the children of Asher, a prince, Ahihud, the son of Shlomi, and of the tribe of the children of Naphtali, a prince, Pedahel, the sons of Amihud, good Swedish name. These are they whom the Lord commanded to divide the inheritance unto the children of Israel in the land of Canaan. So God chooses everything, the princes, the people are going to do it, the details of the map, everything, as the Lord commanded Moses, and that's how God reigns in the midst of his people. You see? And when people are not obedient to the law of God, that is to the teaching of God about any given detail, and they become rebels, you see? And there is a lot of punishment there. And a lot of the punishments that we have in the land, a lot of the sickness and disease and affliction and oppression and all kind of things like that, because we're not obedient to the law that God commanded Moses. Even if it is in other lands, the principles are still there in many ways. You see, and that's what God says at the end, through the prophecy of Malachi, you remember the law of Moses or else I'm going to bring utter destruction on you. And he's still going to send them two lost prophets, two witnesses, they're called in Revelation, Zechariah, one in the spirit of Elijah, that is the prophet. It's not the same person, you know, even though the Jews think it's the same person, but that person is dead. And he's going to bring them to that knowledge and understanding. Bring them back as John the Baptist came, you know, to bring them back to the knowledge of the law. As Elijah, the first one, came to bring them back to the knowledge of the law, to the commandments of Moses, you see, to the law of Moses. That's what the role of Elijah and then John and then the future person. And notice, in each case, it's a different person. Like John, he was not Elijah. People thought he was. You see, it's another person. And so it is today. And the Jews are not aware of that. They think still the same personality that came at that time, Elijah the prophet, is coming back. Because that's the name that was used there in Malachi. And this is the way it's going to be. And so now we go to chapter 35. And the Lord spoke unto Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho, saying, command the children of Israel that they give unto the Levites of the inheritance of their possession. In other words, now I give them the borders for all the tribes, and I have to take care of all the Levites. And again, God is the one in charge of every little detail in the history of Israel, the nation, the people, and the life. And so he says, you command them. You know, it's not a suggestion. You do if you feel like it. God commands. God never suggests. And so he says, you command the children of Israel that they give unto the Levites of the inheritance of their possession cities to dwell in. So they gave them cities, not lands. And obviously, those cities had also a little land around it. After all, and you've got to grow your daily vegetable there and keep your cows there and cattle and all that. So that's what it says. They were given cities and also suburbs, as we shall read later on. That is, courtyards around it, you know, piece of land all around. Now the cities shall they have to dwell in, and their open land, also an open land, shall be for their cattle. You see, you don't put in, you know, the cattle in the city, put in an open land, in the pasture. And for their substance, and for all their beasts, and the open land about the cities, which you shall give unto the Levites, shall be from the wall of the city and outward 1,000 cubits round about. So they literally had to go and measure exactly. And the priest couldn't say, well, I want more, I want here, so I want there. No, whatever God commanded, that's exactly the people of Israel followed, you know, they followed those instructions. And so everywhere in the 48 cities of the gift of the Levites, the elders of the city went out there and measured 1,000 cubit feet around the city, and that became the pasture, the open field for them. And that's the way God rules in His, in the midst of His people. In other words, the law of God is the government of God, ultimately speaking. Anyway, we should stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.